now we are opening up the friendly town portion. So let us begin with the chant, and we're gonna raise it to 11 with this. So like let's like everyone together. Friendly town! Friendly town! God, it's a slobber knocker! Woo! Alright, Space Mountain. Okay, today's topic is that this has been brought to us by our friendly bartending mayor, Todd Lewis. Everyone, please give him a round of applause. Yeah. Good job. This is, you know, like Friendly Town, we have a lot of trouble sleeping. We have a lot of insomnia. We're tired a lot of times. And this day-to-day life cycle that we have here is, I'm doing this because I can't see, even for all the two people currently out there. And we, you know, it just, hearing some comfort, yes, mood lighting. Yes, that's exactly what we need. We need some comforting lighting to help us lull us into a false sense of security. So when we fall asleep and the spiders don't finally come to get us. So we're going to recite some bedtime stories for you people, for you fine people, all 11 million of you in the audience tonight. But for me, before we begin too far, I'm going to give you a choice. I could give you the poem that I wrote in 10 minutes during my lunch break, which is maybe bedtime related. I'm not sure. Might suit more for a beatnik style thing. I would save it for future. I will read from this green book that's entitled Area Handbook for the Soviet Union in a bedtime-like narration, just a random portion of it. Or I will read this fanfic that I found on the internet called The End of Time, an Anne Frank X Goku from Dragon Ball Z fanfic. So select your choices, people. What do you want to hear? It's a little bit of both, to be fair. You know what? I'll tease you a bit, and I'll come back and we'll do another part, like on the second part. We got a lot of time here, people. Okay, I'm gonna read the fanfic first. I'm just gonna read the first paragraph, and then we'll switch on to our next mysterious bedtime narrator. This is called The End of Time, Anne Frank X Goku fanfic. Anne sighed as she sat in her room, staring at her wall. She just finished writing in her diary and had nothing to do. Life was boring in the secret annex, but it was better than the alternative. It was all right talking to Peter or Margot, but they were both such quiet people, unlike the always active Anne. All of a sudden, a flash of light appeared in the room. Anne jumped back, stifling a scream. Before she could run out of the closed door, she knows that the person who appeared before her in the flash was not a Nazi officer, but someone who she has never seen before. His clothes were very strange, and his hair was in a spiky style that was totally new to her. She stood against the wall, wary of the stranger, but he walked towards her and smiled, extending a hand. "My name is Goku," the mysterious stranger said. Anne nervously put her hand in his. He bent down and kissed it softly, then let go. Anne blushed, feeling something she had never felt before go off inside of her. "My name is Anne, ... she replied quietly. And that's what I'm going to leave you with. If you want to continue that, please say so. Or I'm going to leave it there in the meantime to entice you. But first, we're going to introduce our first bedtime narrator. And they have written the name Peter... I forgot what it's like. Peter Pimp Daddy Pan? Is that correct? Alright. Well, let us welcome to the stage our first bedtime narrator, Peter Pimp Daddy Pan.
That sounded way more menacing.
That's right, I'm Peter Pimp Daddy Pan. You might have heard of me before in the Disney flicks or the children's books. And listen, I'm here to set the record straight, all right? That shit is all whitewashed bullshit. And I'm going to tell you how it all really went down, all right? people acting like I'm some fucking cool, good, ne'er-do-well. Man, Wendy was a trick, dog. I'm going to tell you what happened. So here's how it started, right? I was peeping in on Mary Darling's kids through their windows, you know? Because, man, she got some hot kids. I do this on a regular basis, man. I be watching Wendy undress. She pretty cute, dog. But listen, one night while I was peeping, I was on some pretty mean PCP, man. And my shadow came off my body, all right? So I was like, whoa, this is kind of, that happened before. This must be some good shit. So I freak out. I try to catch my shadow, you know, and this Wendy chick, she catches me outside making noise and shit. Now, Wendy a freak, all right? So I give her a rip of this shit that I'm on, and she starts sucking me off, you know? Right as I'm coming, my shadow comes back to my body. It's like everything back to normal, you know? Everything's fine. So I see potential in this Wendy trick. I invite her to come back to the trap house. You know, I call it Neverland. I hang out with my boys and I turn a few tricks. I'm like, yo, Wendy, I'm going to push you to work, girl. You got a magic mouth, man. It's money in that motherfucker. So I'm like, I call my gang back at the trap house, the Lost Boys, man. They mostly kids, but they stupid, man. I can trick them into selling dope. So, you know, I got a business going on out of this motherfucker. So she got two brothers want to come along because they ain't got shit going on. They in the suburbs or some shit. It's boring. So I'm like, all right, no, whatever. Normally, I ain't cool with incest and shit, but I figure I can get them to sell a few bags for me on the side or whatever. So we go back. We smoke up. And next thing we know, we flying back to Neverland in my ride, you know, high as fuck and shit. And we get to this spot, and my boy Toodles gets spooked and starts shooting at my car when I pull up in the driveway. Almost kills my new trick Wendy, man. So I'm just like, yo, Toodles, you need to calm it down. I give Wendy a room in the trap house to suck some dicks and shit. And I tell Toodles and whoever else wants to go pay her a visit, man. While I teach her two brothers the art of slang and dope, you know. Meanwhile, Toodles and all them, the boys is up there, and Wendy's sucking dicks left and right. Next thing I know, the boys at the crib start calling her mommy and shit. I try to take her two brothers out on a titty joint called Mermaid's Lagoon, and sure enough, one of these dipshits gets into with a dancer who goes by the name of Tiger Lily, man. I tell you what. And she's all hot for her and shit, but she's like some kind of Mexican sex slave or some shit, man. She's being held against her will and sex trafficked and stuff by the mafia, man. I tell her to leave that shit alone, man. But he gets all real smart and tries to sneak her at the back or some shit. And these mafiosos catch her, man. They get pretty fucking pissed. So, you know, they the ones running the joint and shit. And they get real ugly real quick, man. Some motherfucker with a hook hand straight up stabbed me as we're trying to make an exit. So we take Tyler Lily back into her poppy's place. And her essays hold us up for the night while we try to figure out how to get away from the mafia. And I figure out how to stop bleeding from this hook wound, man. Shit. So they gave me some kind of crazy Mexican medicine to help the pain. I think it was oxys or some shit, but it was good with something. I don't know. But they were good, though, I tell you what. We finally get back to the trap house, and Wendy's acting all weird. I think she does suck to herself crazy, man. Maybe got into some bad shit while we were gone and starts talking about how she loves me and shit. And I'm just like, bitch, back the fuck off. I'm trying to get my dick sucked in this bitch. What the fuck? So anyway, she gets all bent out of shape, and she's still high, so she tries to leave. And I'm like, bitch, the mafia out there looking for your brothers. You can't go nowhere. But she does. And the mafia catches her ass. Surprise the fucking prize. Anyway, so they call asking me for some ransom or some shit. But I'm still high on oxys and trying to get my freak on with my other girl, Tinkerbell, at this point. So I'm like, yo, bro, sorry. I ain't got nothing to do with that shit. I'm not a girl. New phone. Who this? Anyway, so. But then Tinkerbell ODs on my oxys or some shit, so I gotta get the fuck out of there while the ambulance come by or some shit. So I figure I might as well see what the fuck's up with these mafiosos and my bitch. You know, her brothers were holding a couple hundred of dope that I fronted them, so I figure I'd get my shit back. Might as well get my dick sucked in the process, you know. So I get to the house and all these mafiosos are fucked on this crocodile shit, man. Some nasty shit, man. So I just kind of walk in there and take my money and my bitch and make a sneaky exit, you know. But at this point, Wendy's too freaked out to suck dick, man. They got her all hopped up on some nasty shit. She starts turning green and shit. So I dump her ass back off at home, man. But when I get out the house, Miss Darling starts acting all weird and shit. She ain't mad that I took her daughter or nothing, but she's asking where she can get hooked up with some drugs and shit. Now, normally I know, but I tell that bitch she can suck my dick for a dime bag. So we do that, you know. Afterwards, Miss Darling asks if I want to stay for dinner. Miss Darling is apparently locked. Mr. Darling, that is, apparently locked up in the joint. So I think mommy's feeling kind of lonely around the house, I guess. But I'm like, nah, bitch, I can't be in the house with two crazy crackos at the same time. So I bounce back to Neverland, man. Later, I bump into Wendy at the corner store. And she's like, hey, daddy, when you gonna pick me back up for a good time? I'm like, yo, sorry, do I know you? Whatever, man. The end, dog.
Peter Pimp Daddy Pan motherfucking everyone. Give him a round of applause. Like that was like Peter Pan by way of New Jack City, essentially. So,
let's see really quick here. Just feel an awkward moment of silence here. Just for, you know, just for everyone's pleasure. and lay on the floor. I'm skipping ahead a little bit. Feeling searing pain run through her leg where the bullet had met its mark. The Gestapo officer menacingly moved towards her, grinning, when all of a sudden there was a blinding flash of light causing the officer to shield his eyes. A huge cloud of smoke appeared next to Anne, blocking her from the soldier's vision. When the smoke cleared, he was in for quite the surprise. There was Goku, holding Anne in her arms, standing next to a huge metal capsule. Goku, cried Anne, you came back, for me. Goku smiled. Anything for you, my dear, he said. Our love will never be lost, not until the end of time. The Gestapo officer turned tail and ran, but Goku was too quick for him. After laying Anne on the concrete, he dashed towards a Nazi and knocked him to the ground unconscious with only one blow. Nazi scum, muttered Goku as he spit on his enemy's lit body, then returned to Anne. Here, I have something for you, Goku said as he removed a small bean from his pocket. What on earth is this? Asked Anne. Goku smiled, remembering how ignorant she was to everyday life to him. A senzu bean, he said. Just eat it and it will cure your leg. Anne followed his instructions and popped the bean into her mouth as the wound on her calf magically healed. Now come on, commanded Goku. We've got some Nazi ass to kick. Anne jumped on the mysterious Saiyan's back as he launched off into the sky. Part 2, end. Next up, with another bedtime story for the crowd, Todd Lewis. Be prepared to sleep.
I grew up in a religious household, so I'm going to be reading my bedtime story from the Holy Comedy Bible. I'm here to tell you all a wondrous tale about a fantastic place, a place with golden microphone cords, loud, boisterous laughers who are unshy and unreserved, where your friends always show up in time to see your set, and where that cute girl or boy that you always had a crush on shows up and laughs at your jokes. Where the drinks are always comped, and you always get the light exactly when you're ready for it. Yes, my friends, I'm speaking, of course, of Comedy Heaven. A wonderful place. But if you want to stand in front of that giant brick wall in the sky, you must be judged worthy. You must follow the laws of the great funny man in the sky. Not only must you follow his rules, both written and unwritten, but you must prove your mettle by being judged as funnier than a goose. No easy task. Gooses are so hateful and full of spite, so unreasonable. They're like the Jeff Dunham of birds, a dangerous foe indeed. But what happens to those that don't follow the great funny man in the sky's rules? Those that leave as soon as an open mic as soon as they are done, go over on time, don't tip their servers, and don't attend the shows that they aren't on occasionally, just to watch and not to perform. We're the comedians that don't prepare for their sets, that spin yarns flimsy and untrue. Those who never suggest they're good comedian buddies to bookers or do anything to make their local scene better. They go to comedy hell, children, and to serve the comedy devil. And let me tell you about the comedy hell. The audience is made up only of people waiting for the rock show or the bus and other comedians that all think they're funnier than you are. The red walls are as red as flame, covered in slain animals. Primitive lighting lights naked women of yesteryear, both on canvas and velvet, where your soul will reside in a box of mixtapes upstairs. Abandoned demo tapes from bands from 2003 that never got to play there. The only saint there is Thomas Ledoux, and it's beer only and cash only. No strong drink to distract you from your own despair. The door is guarded by the head of a dragon and a soul who ceased caring about anything years ago. One of the bathrooms has a bench in it for no particular reason. It has been lost to the ages. For those listening at home, I am describing the bar that we are currently in. Because that's right, you're already in Comedy Hell, and I'm the Comedy Devil. All of your souls belong to me. Good night, children.
Todd Lewis, the Comedy Devil, everyone. I always knew it would come down to me and the Comedy Devil. So, Goku smirked, then said, "It's come down to this. You and me, fighting like men. If you defeat now, I'll kill you rather painlessly." Goku had the definite advantage, or so it seemed. Hitler burst into a laugh as Goku looked on quizzically. The slowly rose into the air as his brown hair and pencil mustache turned into a blonde color and his brown eyes turned blue. Goku reeled in horror. Hitler continued laughing, then finally said, "Goku, you came here expecting to fight a madman, but instead you have found a god!" Hitler had become a Super Saiyan. To be concluded, after Jake Hendrick's bedtime story.
Hurry up, God damn it, Trevor, and Thomas, and Teal, and Tegan, and Tiana, get in your damn beds. Jesus fucking Christ, one fun night in Tijuana, now I got responsibilities. This is bullshit. This is a bunch of crap. Now sit down, I'm going to tell you a bedtime story, don't worry about it. Shut up, I'm not giving you another Slim Jim, Trevor, God damn it, you've already had four, okay? I don't want you turning into Macho Man overnight. Pretty sure that's how it happened, okay? I read the Bible. I'm a break character to say I walked the kid. So there we go. No, but hey, sit down. All right. Uncle Carver's got a bedtime story for you, okay? We'll tell you. Once upon a time, there was a man that worked 16 hours a fucking day at the steel mill in Johnson City, Tennessee, right? He worked 16 hours a day, right? And there's this princess, okay? And there's this princess that he had to go save. It's called his alimony check, all right? So we had to go pick up the alimony check, but apparently office hours are only 4 to 8. God damn it, I get off at 9. See, this is what's wrong with the government today, all right, and society and the world around us, all right, because I'm a grown man with children, you know what I mean? I raise them right, you know, I teach them about Bible and hating queers, you know, like a good American man, and that, you know, gay people should just be in their own UFC so we can watch for our own enjoyment, right? But no, I can't get my check on time, but no, because there's always Darla, you know, coming up and asking me if I got money. No, I don't got money. I told you the office don't open at 4 and closes it. See, I'm pissed. So how do we solve this problem, children? How do we solve this issue that we have? That's right. We rob a goddamn bank. Oh, I'm sorry. We acquire money from the bank, okay? And we go up there and we give them you know, your bank card, a.k.a. your Smith & Wesson, and then they give you the money, but you got it, I mean, you know, have a little, you know, common decency, you know what I mean? You need to wear underwear when you're going to the bank. Normally, you don't need to wear underwear. Trevor, I'm looking at you, you know, you don't need to wear underwear, but so, you know, when you go to the bank, that's an important, important meeting, you know? You go to the bank, you get the money, all right? Then, you know, but, and then as you know, as Carver was leaving the bank, you know what I mean? These magical red and blue dragons started chasing him. And they were driven by guys that were made fun of in high school and really wanted to prove that they were cool and tough. So they raised a red and blue dragon that made noises that sounded like 5 to 10, 5 to 10. And how do you evade them? That's right. If you remember, I showed y'all Dukes of Hazzard for bedtime last night, so you already know what to do. Tuck and roll, motherfucker. Just hit that damn steering wheel as hard as you can. Go over the top. Maybe if time will slow down and you'll get a nice, you know, cute quirk like in the show. Man, I love that show. Dude, that was a good show. That was a good damn show. You see, you kids are too damn young to understand what television is these days with your Droke and your Jason Bobber, you know, and your fucking Ricky Martin. He's real popular, right? He's still a thing. I don't know. I was a damn Latinos. sounds like a Hispanic cereal, Latinos. But anyway, my point is this, all right? Fucking, you know what I mean? Don't make any of you. All right, that's what I would teach you right now. Because if you do, then, like, you gotta work a steel mill for 9 hours a day. 16 hours a day. See, I'm so drunk off this pibber that I forgot my own origin story. Don't even remember my own shit that I said. See, that's how you know that you drink well, is when you're telling a story and you don't remember it 5 minutes in. See, that's what it is. That's the sign of a champion. That's what that is. It's the sign of a champion. I guess, good night, and sleep tight. If you piss in your fucking bed, you're going to lay in it. Just letting you know. I'm not cleaning that shit. Get up for this hippie guy. Fucking this guy.
Jake Hendrick from the steel mill. You actually only work 9 hours. You just found like you have a mattress up in the high loft in there. You just like hang out there and sleep the rest of the time. It's like you figured it out. You figured it out is what happened. So, all right, is everyone feeling pretty sleepy at this point? We got some good bedtime stories in. Yeah. That sounds about right. But before we go to bed, I just have the conclusion to the story. Trademark. Goku stared Hitler into the eye. Into the eye is what it says. Then screamed, "This ... is for love!" And flew up into the sky, his hair turning blonde, his eyes blue, an aura of power radiating from him. Hitler looked on in horror at Goku. He had made the ultimate achievement. He had become a super ultra power Saiyan. Goku made a cup shape with his hands and aiming it at Hitler as he belted out the words, "Kamehameha!" As a beam of pure energy shot at his enemy, disintegrating the Nazi leader's body. Goku then collapsed to the ground in a heap, exhausted from the fight. 2 years later, Anne and Goku had finally reached the date of their wedding. After the battle, Anne and Goku destroyed the time machine and took a boat to Australia. For whatever reason, fuck all that. They changed their names and lived new lives, ready to start over. The two young people looked into each other's eyes as they kissed, as the Reverend pronounced them man and wife. Finally, it seemed Anne was at peace, and they would always be together until the end of time. Good night, children. Yeah, thank you for coming out to Friendly Town tonight, all of you. Just, we'll be back here next Monday with another topic. We're a Friendly Town audience. I tried to combine the words Mayor and Tyler again. Mayor Tyler will be back on his espionage mission to Chum Village at some point in the near future. Until then, just make peace with the rest of your week. Good night.
Yay!